Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's EHS podcast for the week ending April 24th. My name is Alan Nguyen.
And I'm Allison Granke.
And we'll be bringing you the latest news in environmental health and safety. So, Allison, I believe you have an update for us from OSHA?
Yeah, so OSHA has issued a notice of proposed rulemaking to update eye and face protection standards impacting the general industry, construction, marine terminals, and other sectors. So the goal would be to make sure that they are using consistent and the most current versions of the standards coming out of the American National Standards Institute. The Institute puts together standards that reflect the overall consensus of the professionals who work at all levels of the public and private sectors. Therefore, the resulting standards incorporate a wide variety of perspectives, and they're considered a best practice approach to ensuring safer workplaces. So OSHA's current standard for personal protective equipment for eyes and face was adopted in 2009, and this final rule didn't modify the construction standard, which some people took issue with. Since then, the American National Standards Institute has updated their standard, and so OSHA's new proposed rulemaking will have a particular impact on the construction industry. These standards are particularly important as OSHA reports that thousands of people are blinded each year from work-related eye injuries that could have been prevented. Eye injuries alone are estimated to cost more than $300 million per year in lost production time, medical expenses, and worker compensation. And you can view the notice of proposed rulemaking yourself by following the link in the resources section of this podcast. And Alan, you have a story for us about a NIOSH conference?
Yeah, so the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, also known as NIOSH, along with the American Psychological Association and the Society for Occupational Health Psychology, will co-host the 11th International Conference on Occupational Stress and Health. This year's conference is scheduled to take place between May 6th to May 9th in Atlanta and is organized around the theme of sustainable work, sustainable health, and sustainable organizations. The 2015 conference will draw special attention to the concept of sustainability, focusing in particular on the integral role of occupational safety and health in sustainable economic growth and the associations between sustainable work and health and organizational economic sustainability. The conference will feature presentations by social sustainability and corporate social responsibility experts from around the world. According to the NIOSH news release, the conference will mark 25 years of collaborative meetings in this conference series to address the ever-changing nature of work and how they affect the health, safety, and well-being of workers. The conference series covers work and family issues, new forms of work organization, changing worker demographics, and best practices for preventing stress and improving the health of workers and their organizations. NIOSH is presenting a pre-conference workshop on developing sustainable work and organizations through Total Worker Health. During it, members of the NIOSH Total Worker Health Office will explain how to successfully integrate worksite safety and health programs to improve overall employee outcomes. And some of the NIOSH sessions will include how quality of work life, health, and health behaviors vary by occupation and wage level, the impact of workplace violence on education workers, results from a state-based study, childcare stress and symptoms of psychological distress among police officers, the business value of paid sick leave, and work-related risk factors for low back pain, just to name a few. And if you're looking to learn more about the conference, be sure to check out the resource section of this podcast. And Allison, I believe you have some interesting mine safety data for us.
Yeah, so the U.S. Department of Labor's Mine Safety and Health Administration has just released their preliminary data for the previous year. Their Mine Safety and Health at a Glance webpage has also been updated with new charts including information on inspections, violations, the number of mines and miners, as well as fatality and injury rates for coal, metal and non-metal and all mining. While it appears that the 2014 overall operator-reported injury rate has improved and is at an all-time historic low, the number of mining deaths and fatality rates has increased. This was driven by a high number of mining deaths in the metal and non-metal sector. In total, there were 44 mining deaths in 2014, an increase over 42 deaths in 2013. The 2014 total includes two new metal and non-metal mining deaths from that year that had previously not been attributed to the mining industry, but have now been added to the fatality totals. In addition, 11 fatalities in 2014 involved mine contractors compared to just 4 contract deaths the previous year. Again, the highest increase was in the metal and non-metal sector. And overall, 121,646 citations and orders were issued in 2014. MSHA's enforcement efforts this year are definitely focused on addressing the trends that have been identified in last year's data, particularly in that metal and non-metal sector. And if you'd like to take a look at the data yourself, you can find a link in the resources section of this podcast. And Alan, you have a story for us about a new return to work program?
Yeah, so the California Department of Industrial Relations has launched the Return to Work Supplement Program for injured workers. The fund is considered an important component of workers' compensation reforms in Senate Bill 863 and will quickly get an additional $5,000 to each eligible injured worker who has a disproportionate loss of earnings. The Department of Industrial Relations inaugurated the new program starting April 13th with an online portal as well as a kiosk that connects to the portal in its Division of Workers' Compensation Office across the state, allowing injured workers to easily file the application. All completed applications will be reviewed for eligibility within 60 days from the date of filing, it says, and payment to workers will be made within 25 days of the eligibility determination. Changes in the state's worker compensation law through 863, which became law on January 1st, 2003, included a 30% increase, more than $800 million per year, in permanent disability indemnity rates for workers. It also sets up an independent medical review system for resolving medical treatment disputes with review by a physician to ensure that injured workers receive timely and appropriate medical treatment. Included in the major benefit increase is up to $120 million annually in return-to-work special funds for injured workers whose employers do not offer them continued employment after the injury at approximately the same pre-injury income levels. The state says that the changes also meant cost savings to businesses resulting in lower medical loss, indemnity, and medical severities. And for more information on this story, be sure to check out the resource link of this podcast. And that concludes this week's EHS podcast. If you're interested in any of the stories that we covered in this week's podcast, be sure to check out the resource links. And as always, thanks for listening.